seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when will cars safely drive themselves on our streets? And who in Ireland is providing the technology to help them do that? We talk to one of the country's biggest automotive autonomy entrepreneurs.
I have BMW Drive Assist in my own vehicle, and it is much, much safer because we are all prone to distraction, especially when we're on the motorway from Limerick to Dublin, for example. We've all been there where you actually forgot a whole section of the road. So I would say if you take it from a safety perspective, and it does allow you to kind of relax.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
The notorious criminal Michael O'Loughlin turned his back on his gangland associates and broke ranks simply by pleading guilty to the many crimes he committed.
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons. And at one stage, we also know that there was conversations about him organising hits on people.
Now behind bars, O'Loughlin spent the initial COVID lockdown in 2020 carrying out a string of offences as a Europe-wide net closed in. His conviction lifted the lid on how criminal gangs communicated with each other over a secret phone network.
The key was decrypting mobile phone handsets linked to a platform known as EncroChat, operated from France and used exclusively for drug deals, gun running, and plots to kill rivals in turf wars.
And the wealth of intelligence police forces across Europe got hold of when they cracked that encrypted code.
Dutch police alone saying 20 million messages they were sifting through. The police were inside the networks well before the criminals had realised, and that led to this wave of arrest.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Alison Morris, crime correspondent for the Belfast Telegraph, to talk about a criminal who says he has turned over a new leaf and the messaging system that brought him down. Alison Morris, the name Michael O'Loughlin, it's familiar if you're covering or reading about crime on both sides of the border. But now he's broken ranks with his gang and it's been quite a sensational fallout. What's happened here?
Yeah, so Michael O'Loughlin, he's a career criminal. He's a guy whose career in crime goes back a considerable time. And we're not just talking someone who was involved in petty crime. We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons. And at one stage, we also know that there was conversations about him organising hits on people, or at least two people. It was discussed that needed to be taken out. And according to Michael O'Loughlin, he was working at a very high level with a number of different crime gangs jumping from one to the other, and had contacts not just here, but in the Netherlands and also in the UK. He was dealing with gangs in Birmingham and London. He's a significant player in the criminal underworld. He was the sort of go-to guy if someone needed something carried out in a very violent manner. Usually what we find when we're dealing with organised criminals like this is that some of them are involved in drugs, some of them are involved in violence, some might be involved in drugs, and there might be a bit of crossover. But he was an all-rounder, if you like, someone who could really put his hand on anything at any particular time.
When and why was Michael O'Loughlin arrested on this occasion?
He was arrested after there was information received that he had been involved in cross-border criminality. That came through, obviously, the EncroChat hacking scandal. But when he was arrested, it was discovered that he had been associating with criminals on both sides of the border, and in one case, arranging for the execution of at least two people, or at least these were the conversations. His defence would later say, well, he's a bit of a fantasist. This might not have been exactly what he was doing. And as well as that, organising quite significant drug deals. And when I say significant, you know, these are drug deals on a massive scale, on hundreds of thousands of pounds scale. He was also involved in the widespread distribution of millions of tablets of diazepam, herbal cannabis, and at one stage heroin as well was discussed, as well as weapons procurement. So it was extensive. There were over 30-odd charges that he was eventually charged with, and then later, at a much later date, would plead guilty with. But this sort of kicked off, I suppose, a series of events, because once they were able to access the information in terms of what Michael O'Loughlin was doing, well, then that obviously led to other people who he was involved with as well. And that included very high-powered criminals on both sides of the border.
So he's basically been in custody for the last 4 years, initially denying these offences, but now pleading guilty. Is that right?
He did. He pleaded guilty after quite a considerable time on remand. You know, if you look at the behaviour of people when they are on remand, you can see if they don't apply for bail, it usually indicates that they believe they're going to get found guilty anyway. And it's much easier for a criminal to do their time on remand. The regime on remand in almost all prisons is a hell of a lot more relaxed than it would be if you were a convicted criminal. Then you go on where you have to actually earn any kind of rights in terms of, you know, any kind of privileges that would exist in prison. Whereas if you're a remand prisoner, you're considered, you know, innocent until proven guilty, and therefore you don't have to partake in any of the programs or anything. So we're seeing more and more prisoners are doing most of their sentence on remand while awaiting trial. And obviously the slow pace of our justice system, and bear in mind all of this happened as well during COVID when the courts weren't running at a particularly fast pace anyway, meant that it was over 4 years between the time of his arrest and the time of his sentencing. He had been living in Galway. His family are still in Galway. That was mentioned during his sentencing, that he had obviously been parted from his family for this time, and had only had, I think it said, only had three face-to-face visits with his family during the 4 years that he'd been on remand. That means that also when he did get sentenced, and he was sentenced to 12 years, but half of that was to be served at prison and half of that served on remand. So what it means is he's 4 years of a sentence already done before he goes into the actual convicted regime within Magabri prison.
What was his demeanour in court, and what sort of mitigation was being taken into account here around his outlook now?
So the mitigation that you would get in this case is that he did plead guilty. His defence argued that he had a workable defence, you know, that some of the information that had been supplied, a lot of this was quite tactical, and it was based on information that came through the EncroChat network, that he could have, if he had wanted to, as they said, you know, he could have went out and contested this and dragged this on possibly for another year or two. Instead, they had said that, you know, he was a model prisoner. He was taking part in all these the different kind of activities within prison. He just wanted to turn his life around, they said. And that a lot of these charges, despite the fact that the evidence existed from the messages that had been sent between one criminal and another criminal, that a lot of this, they said, was bravado, that he had a drug problem himself. He had a drink problem. And when he was, you know, off on a bender like this, he tended to be full of bravado and say things that he had no intentions of carrying out. But the main mitigation the judge would have taken into consideration was the guilty plea, and that would get you some time off the sentence.
So he seems to have basically turned his back on his former criminal associates and expressed, if not a level of remorse, but regret about his criminal life.
Yeah, I mean, his defence clearly said that he had turned his back on his life of crime. And that we know that there are people that he was charged with conspiring to murder. He was charged with conspiring to murder someone who was named on the messages as Johnny. It was never quite clear who that person was intended to be. The issue with that is that there was a lot of other criminals waiting on this case. This was the test case, if you like. He was arrested in connection with the EncroChat, the first person charged. And a lot of people were waiting to see how this case went before then they make decisions on how they would plea, because there are dozens of people charged in connection with the similar EncroChat network hacking. So he was, if you like, the case that they were all watching. So now that he has pleaded guilty, I think what we will see is other cases and quite similar cases pleading guilty in the future.
So that brings us into the whole EncroChat affair. For those unfamiliar, what's EncroChat and how did it come across the attention of the authorities?
It was a Europe-based communications system. It offered these modified sort of smartphones, if you like, that just looked like an ordinary phone handset, but they were completely encrypted and they worked off the EncroChat network.
These devices had dual operating systems, would look like an Android phone, but with us turning on the other system, the other operating system, you'd be able to, of course, tap into a network used by criminals around the world. Some of the other things here, we're talking about removing the phone's camera, removing the GPS tracker, even removing the USB port on the device to make sure that it itself was effectively untraceable.
So what happened was a lot of people were using these phones, that the phone network had been hacked. It had been hacked, I think, for something like 12 hours. And during that time, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of data was downloaded. And then that was then passed on to various authorities in different jurisdictions for them then to siphon through it and try and work out who they could and couldn't arrest and charge. And Michael O'Loughlin was one of the first people to be charged. His EncroChat handset was discovered when his home was searched. What we find in the later searches, and I had carried this story, saying that the users got a text message from EncroChat saying, you know, our network has been compromised, basically get rid of this handset. And what I was told by sort of many people in that sort of criminal underworld is that most people then proceeded to ditch their phones. I was told by one who said, you know, if you drag the Lagan River, you'll maybe find a couple of rusty shopping trolleys and about two dozen EncroChat handsets, because that's where they all went. But he was one of the first, so they actually were able to get the handset. It was fascinating because at one stage we had the National Crime Agency were working with the PSNI, and then they were also working with various authorities over in England. We've seen dozens of people, huge big Liverpool crime gang, receiving huge sentences, 25, 26, 27 years for drugs offences, just purely based on EncroChat evidence. It was probably the biggest disruption to the criminal underworld. They get an idea of how maybe one person works or one crime gang works. This was like opening the door to the criminal underworld. The authorities were able to see how they work, who they associate with. And in Northern Ireland terms, that became very interesting. Because here we have, you know, loyalist crime gangs, we have Republican crime gangs, and what the authorities were able to find was, well, there was no such thing as politics or religion or tribal differences when it came to crime, that they were all in one big crime gang dealing with each other, and money talks all languages, and they could see the associations. And crime gangs who they thought were, you know, arch enemies, they actually found lower down the chain were dealing with each other quite often. The intelligence that was gleaned from this was probably every bit as valuable as the amount of arrests that were made. So throughout these messages, and you can see these when you look at this particular case, there was a lot of talk about where can get the drugs from the flat. And the flat was the Netherlands, which clearly makes sense geographically when you think about it. It's a very flat country, but that was what was referred to as the Netherlands. And it would have said, you know, that they had jackets, which was what they're referring to as kilos of cocaine. They're in the Netherlands. The Brum, obviously, was Birmingham, and they were talking about dealing with crime gangs there. And a lot of cases say they were talking about guns, they were talking about steel. Can you get me access to steel? And that was talking about, can you get me access to your handgun? And all of the sort of language that was used between them, which they probably thought was very cleverly, and this was encryption upon encryption. But, you know, once it was read out in court, it was quite clear what was going on.
Dutch police alone saying 20 million messages they were sifting through. The really interesting thing here, Tokes, though, is that the police were inside the networks well before the criminals had realised, and that led to this wave of arrests, a really significant moment. And of course, the UK police very visibly conducting many of those, but it was a truly European operation.
And it even gave an insight into the operation of the Kinahan cartel, which is very rare for the authorities to have that level of knowledge.
Extremely rare. And a lot of this was coming through. And you can see in some of the messages they refer to, you know, Dublin crews. And when they refer to them, they're referring to the Kinahans. And the majority of drugs that were coming into Ireland, either north or south, they originate at one point from the Kinahans. And they may well go through a dozen, two dozen different suppliers, at which point they will be cut, they will be changed, they will be mixed with other things, they will have the prices changed, they will go up, it will be higher, it will be lower, but it all originates from one source. That was across the board, whether or not these people were loyalists or Republicans, or whether they were just, you know, plain criminals, or whether they were whatever kind of criminal gang they were. A lot of this was dealing with the Kinahans, who obviously were seen as the pinnacle of the crime gangs.
How did one go about purchasing an Incro phone? Did you just walk down the street into a mobile phone store and go, hello, I'd like an illegally untraceable phone, please? How did it work?
This is another thing as well, because to have an Incro chat phone, you had to know a criminal to buy an Incro chat phone off. Yeah. They were almost seen in some cases, like, you know, status symbol. And they were quite expensive pieces of kit as well. You know, they were costing quite a few thousands of pounds, as well as in the money that were paying to the network. They could send messages and send photographs, but there wasn't something that you were using as your day-to-day phone. You know, this was something that was purely just for use in crime and criminality. And so, yeah, there were people who were actually dealing in Incro chat phones as well. And that's how they were making their money. And some of these people were found with two and three phones because they were maybe dealing with two and three different gangs. And they were using two or three different code names as well. And a lot of this data and the way that it came, there was a lot of challenges that went on. There was people who took this to the Supreme Court and said that unless the methodology that was used to access this information was handed over, well, then it shouldn't be permissible to be allowed to be used in court, in a UK court. And that was how a lot of the UK cases, they tried to fight them by saying, well, you can't use this information. You have no idea how it was obtained. It could have been illegally obtained. But, you know, the courts rejected that and allowed that, you know, one particular person from the NCA was able to come and say, I have seen how this evidence was obtained and I am confident this was obtained legally. And the judge said that that should be enough for conviction. And that was when we started seeing all of those convictions in England.
So Michael O'Loughlin comes a cropper here, but this wasn't his first brush with the law. He was a seasoned criminal convicted south of the border previously.
He had, and he'd hadn't been long released from prison, having served a sentence south of the border. But, I mean, the sentences, I always think that when you look at people's criminal past, you think that might paint a picture of who they were. People like him probably get convicted of maybe 5 or 10% of the criminal activity they're involved in. Otherwise, why would they bother? You know, there wouldn't be any money or profit in it. So, I mean, I have spoke to people who knew him, and he didn't seem to have a lot of friends, if you like. The people who he knew him as an associate and through the sort of criminal work that he did. And they had said that, you know, this was someone who had been involved in criminality right back to his early years on both sides of the border. He was living in Warren Point, which was just across the border at the time of his arrest here. But as I've said, he originated from Galway, but he also spent a considerable amount of his time in Dublin as well.
From what we're learning in court, Michael O'Loughlin appears to have turned over a new leaf. He said he regrets his past life. It was nothing but misery. He's moving on now, doing classes and courses inside in prison. He's looking to get moved south of the border, and he's turned his back on his criminal associates. This all adds up, though. Does this make him a target for those criminals he dealt with in the past, or do you think he'll be able to move on to a new life?
He'll be out of jail in 2 years' time. You know, he went into jail in June 2020. He served all that time in remand. He only has to do 6 years in custody. So he technically, as of this June, only has 2 years left. So it won't be long until he's back in the streets where he chooses to live. I think he's trying now to get transferred back down to the south so he can be closer to his children. But, you know, in that respect, will he be safe living there? Well, the fact that his family have been able to remain there without any harm would tell you that maybe some sort of deal or negotiations have taken place to ensure that he is safe, or at least they're safe while he's in prison. It's definitely a wait and see, but he's an interesting character. He's one that, you know, once you looked into the kind of activity he's involved in, it was an unusual case in that, as I said, a lot of criminals, they have a niche, they have something that they specialise in, if you like. And he seemed to specialise in a whole range of criminal activity that made him someone that would not just maybe make a lot of enemies, but would also be in demand by those significant criminal gangs who needed someone who was able to come and operate and do things for them that they perhaps didn't want to get their own hands dirty doing themselves.
And my thanks to Alison Morris. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode of The Indo Daily was produced by Garrett Mulhall, researched by Dave Hanratty, with sound by Rory Bones. Archive clips from Sky News, Channel 4 News, the BBC News and Euronews. If you enjoy The Indo Daily, don't forget to follow and leave us a review.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.